Hello, and welcome to Pinecone Podcast, where we have conversations about issues that are important to you, like faith and family, religion and relationships, Christianity and the church, and a whole lot more. So grab a cup of coffee or your favorite drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy Art, Wes, and Lacey as they have a conversation on Evergreen's Pinecone Podcast.
All right. Today we have a very, very unusual event, which is going to probably cause a lot of problems. And that is that it's just me and Lacey, and Art, our great leader and host, is not here. So I'm actually doing the hosting. I'm sure I will do a very inferior job to Art. But nonetheless, here we go. Art is at the beach having a great time. And so as Art usually begins, how you doing, Lacey?
I'm fantastic. How are you, Wes?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Now, enough with the pleasantries. Let's get to the topic.
I'm ready.
Art always has like some cool little thing to add, but
yeah,
I don't. Let's talk. We're going to talk today about the emotionally healthy woman.
Because
I have a lot of ideas on what it means to be emotionally healthy as a woman. And I want to tell Lacey how she can be an emotionally healthy woman.
I'm waiting for it. So I can counter every point.
That is actually not true in terms of the reason why we're doing this. We are going to talk about the emotionally healthy woman. However, this was Lacey's idea.
It was.
Right?
Absolutely, yeah.
However, I also was very interested in reading the book, The Emotionally Healthy Woman, by Jerry Scazzaro. And it's not because necessarily I wanted to know about women and their emotions, though as a pastor, I minister to women, and I'm the father of six little ladies.
Yep.
And I have a wife as well, and a mother, and a lot of other women who I connect with. Just was able to meet with my cousin, Jennifer, who came down from Kentucky today. Or this week, and we had breakfast together at her campground. That was great. So anyways, I have a lot of great women in my life. I'm very thankful, and I want to be as much of a blessing as I can to them. However, that's not even the main reason I want to talk about this book or even read this book, which I'm now in the process of doing. I have read The Emotionally Healthy Spirituality by Peter Scazzaro, as has Lacey and Art. And yep. it's a very helpful book. And
yep.
The basic insight is one that really is rooted in the whole history of Christianity. And that is that you can't be spiritually healthy unless you're also emotionally healthy. So you've got to give attention to your emotions as well as to doing the spiritual disciplines and service and things like that, to theology, to study of the Bible. You've got to calibrate your emotions to be in conformity with Christ. And that book is a great resource for that. However, Peter Scazzaro says that when he's doing leadership training at his church, he does not have them read Emotionally Healthy Spirituality. He has them read The Emotionally Healthy Woman. All of his leaders, male and female, because it's a better book and it's more helpful. It was originally called I Quit, and I still wish they would have kept that title just because it's a lot more fun, in my opinion, than Emotionally Healthy Woman. That may seem sexist for me to say so, but that is my view. I have not read the whole book, but I do listen to Peter Scazzaro's podcast, and which I highly recommend. And on that podcast, two shows in a row about quit fixing your church. It was towards leaders, towards pastors. It says quit fixing your church. And what he did is he just played the audio version of his wife's book. And it was on quit over functioning.
Yes.
And we'll include the links to that in the when we put up the podcast. So you should be able to find those below. And I would recommend that you listen to those. And I have to say, after listening to that, I agree. This is a way better book than Emotionally Healthy Spirituality, because it just has it's just more pointed. It's just, to me, it just has a power and pungency and just comes at you in a stronger way. And one of the reasons for that is because this book comes out of her experience. And the whole emotionally healthy spirituality is secondarily related to Peter, but it's really related to Jerry and her thinking about how she was relating to her husband and that it wasn't working. It was killing their marriage. It wasn't helping their kids. It wasn't helping her. And she says, I need to quit doing what I'm doing. And so you can see that really heartfelt, deep, careful thinking come out in this book. So that's why I'm excited about discussing some of these ideas here. I don't know how many we'll discuss today. We're going to discuss basically chapters 1 and 2, which is quit fearing what other people think, is basically what this is about. It gives a brief introduction in chapter 1, then quit fearing what people think. So let me just ask Lacey, so is there anything you'd like to add to what I said in terms of an introduction? And secondly, what made you wanted to discuss this book and particularly this chapter?
Yeah, we read Emotionally Healthy Spirituality as a leadership team for our church, and I really liked it. It's actually the second time I've gone through the book. It has a lot of value. It's a lot of digging deep and not something necessarily that I resonated with right away. Like, I'm like, okay, yeah, this is definitely something I should be thinking through. But it's definitely a lot of deep, deep digging. Whereas with Emotionally Healthy Woman, as soon as I started reading, I thought, oh my gosh, this is me. Like, these are some of the things I struggle with. I could immediately see she put to words some of the things that I had been struggling with. And she also gave practical ways to start working out your way out of those things. And I could see, just putting words to what it was that I was struggling with gave me a lot of hope. And I could see that it would bring about an immediate change for myself, for my relationship with God, for my relationship with my husband, for my relationship with my kids, for all of my relationships. And so while these things are not easy to hear or read or not necessarily easy, super easy to implement, they are life-changing. I think they could be life-changing. I think they could bring about just some healthy behaviors in the church as a whole if people started to kind of implement these things. Basically, in her first chapter of quit, oh, what were you going
to
say? Something?
Before you go into the first chapter, so sure. You were saying that as you read this, you were like, this is nailing it for me. It's like, I've been trying to think, I've been struggling to put these things together, and this advances my thinking in such a good way. I love that. I know exactly what that experience. So besides the chapter that we're talking about today, I mean, is there anything specifically, I mean, just to make that concrete for people, that it pops into your mind is like when you said, this really helps, this is something that makes a practical difference.
I think really the first two chapters are just, I'm so excited about talking about it, was like something that God had been laying on my heart about just becoming more of who I am, being more honest about the way that I feel about things, being honest with other people, and like allowing myself to have an opinion, I guess, is part of what I was struggling with. Like, I realized, I've shared in other capacities, and I think even on this podcast before, that I've struggled with anxiety and panic attacks. And as I've read through this book, and as I've been kind of researching what kind of happens when your brain gets to that level of dealing with anxiety and panic attacks. It's really kind of taking on all of that stress and not dealing with it in healthy ways. And so I think that I allowed myself to be afraid of what other people thought of me for so long, and adjusted the way I behaved because of my fears of what other people thought of me, or made decisions about my life because of what I was, how afraid I was of what other people would think if I chose to go this direction or that direction. And instead of really evaluating what I thought and what I wanted and what God thought even, I made decisions based on whether or not it would keep a certain image. To people in my life, not even necessarily people that are close to me, which is ridiculous, but I think, and I'm kind of hoping that I'm not the only person that has done that.
Yeah, I think, well, in the chapter, she gives a whole bunch of examples of ways in which we subtly adjust things or don't say things, adjust what we say in order to really to make people feel more comfortable, but it's not necessarily true to what we actually think, or we are silent about what we think. So I wonder, is there any, so again, I always want to keep, like, let's push it to the concrete, you know, is there any specific examples that you have from your life where this has affected you, where you feel like you've made those adjustments in an unhealthy way?
Yeah, I do have a good example, but before I go into that example, I would like to talk about an example in her book, because there are really small ways that we do this, and there are really large ways that we do this. And so one of the examples she gives in the book is being out to eat with the six other friends. You know, it's after church, you're all going to go out to eat, and you are on a budget. And so in order to stay on that budget, you order a water and a salad, and you know that that's within your $6 budget, and you're good with that. And you know, all your other friends are getting entrees, which is fine. But then someone decides, hey, why don't we just split the, you know, we'll just get the one check. It's easier that way, and we'll just split it evenly. And instead of speaking up at that point and saying, you know what, I'm sorry, I really need to stay within my budget, you react in a way, you go along with what other people are suggesting you do, and you pay it, but in your heart, you are hurting, and it kind of puts a chink in that armor of that relationship that you have with those other people. And you may not go out with them the next time, because you're just kind of harboring that hurt and stuffing that hurt. So that was a small example that she gave. Did you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah. So one of the things if I was talking to that person and they brought that up to me, what the thing that I would just ask is, I would want to ask them is, why couldn't you just say, no, I'm on a tight budget, or I'd rather not do that. I'd rather just pay for our own, if that's okay with everybody. You know, even in a polite way saying that, you know, why? I mean, it's definitely something that people do, for sure. You know, it's not unusual at all that people would have concerns and they wouldn't bring them up. But my question is, why do you want to keep silent about that? Why do you feel uncomfortable about bringing that up? And I think that's the answer to that is a pretty illuminated question, or illuminating answer.
Right. And I think it's an important question to ask yourself, because we've all made those decisions at some point. And so I think in starting to think through the idea of quit being afraid of what other people think, try to think of those small examples of when you have not spoken up because you're afraid of the way that it will affect the relationship or how you'll look to somebody, and start thinking through why. What is it that I'm afraid of? Are those things really going to come to fruition? Like, if I would have just said, I'm sorry, I'm on a tight budget, all of those fears that you were, you know, thinking about in your head about why you wouldn't speak up, would those have really come to fruition, kind of a thing? So just asking yourself that is.
So what do you think some of the answers that people might give to that? Why might someone not speak up?
I think mostly they don't want to look cheap. They don't want to not be invited the next time. They don't want to be rejected in some way. You know, maybe they're afraid that someone will think, oh, they're not very generous with their money, so I don't really want them to come along the next time. And so I think those were the reasons that I was coming up with in my head that you know, people don't want to experience any sort of rejection or confrontation.
What about in thinking of that instance, see, here's what I would contemplate actually happening in that instance. And in part, because I've been in those situations, is that someone would probably say, oh, I'll get yours, you know, and to say that someone would probably take care of it. I mean, you know, and I know that that'd probably be my reaction if someone said, I'll have enough to do that. So, I'll just put it on mine, you know, no problem.
Yeah.
And people, you know, it's kind of weird. It's like, you know, when you think about it, the abstract, the idea that other people would just help you doesn't seem like that big of a deal, but it can seem like death.
Yeah. I think that could actually be a reason that people wouldn't. Like, I don't, right. I don't want to look like I'm needy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, you know, as I think through like Acts 2, where everyone was giving to each other as they had need. And I just kind of wonder, like, would we be able to do that in the church today? Like, not only are people, I think there are a lot of people in the church that are willing to help. I don't think there are a ton of people in the church that are willing to accept help.
Yes.
And I mean general church, not like a specific church, just in the church body in general. We are so independent that we are afraid to accept help.
Well, think about the Apostle Peter when Jesus was going to wash his feet. Never, Lord, you mm-hmm. won't do that to me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the same. In a way, when we let others serve us, it gives them, in some ways, it gives them a power
mm-hmm.
Over us, and acknowledges our own weakness, and that, and acknowledging our own weakness and neediness is a fearful and anxious thing. You know, that raises our anxiety.
Yeah.
So even just to say, even like, this, I don't know if is there another chapter she talks about this, but like just communicating our desires, and saying to someone, you know, I really would like to spend more time with you. You know, it seems like a hard thing for people to say, just to communicate those simple things. Or even like, I would like to, I mean, imagine someone saying, I'd like to go out to eat with you all. I can't really afford it. You know, would someone be willing to cover mine this time? You know, that would be a very hard thing for a lot of people to ask.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about, on the other hand, there are certain people who are, you know, there's certain people who tend to overfunction. There's also people who tend to underfunction, and that's not necessarily, we tend to condemn them, but in a way underfunctioning can be a rather rational strategy for getting through life, mm-hmm. that you get other people involved to help you. And so both are our weakness, and we can maybe talk about that more later. And I have people in my life like that. And one of the things I've done is to go out of my way to ask those people to actually help me with things. Like, so for eating together, I just say, would you mind paying for mine this time? Mm-hmm. Just to totally, because it's like, it's almost like it's perpetually the one way. So just to break it up and give people a different sense of possibilities, I just sometimes just try something different than what seems natural.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I think even doing that kind of can empower people who are under functioners, because then they, mm-hmm. it starts to build a confidence in them. Because, you know, we could talk about trauma, we could talk about all kinds of things that create those over-functioning or under-functioning personalities. And so giving the over-functioner a chance to be the one being served, and the under-functioner the chance to be the one who is helping, can balance that situation out. So we talked about a small opportunity for us to quit being afraid of what other people think, but I do want to share a larger thing and kind of talk about how it has affected my life in a major way. Because one of the things Jerry talks about is, like, she was not doing this with just random people in her life. These were she wouldn't say things to her own husband out of fear of how it would make her look. And I do want to say that before we started this podcast, I knew that we were going to try to talk about some examples. And so I just reached out to Ben, my husband, and said, hey, this is the example God's laying on my heart that I want to share. And I just wanted to make sure it was okay with you. And so it was okay with him that I share this, but, we have had, I have had actually had four children. Three of them belong to Ben and I, and one of them I was a gestational surrogate for. So I had four pregnancies with, you know, live births in a matter of less than 5 years. And so it had kind of taken a toll on my body, and we decided that we were done having kids. And so there were various different things that kind of worked into that decision. But one of the biggest things that I was struggling with or thinking through, that was a motivation for me, to encourage, getting a vasectomy, was that, I was afraid of what other people would think, if we decided to continue to have more kids, because we have three, adorable, caring, big-hearted, energetic boys. At the time, you know, we were financially struggling, and just some different things. And I was very, very nervous about if we continued to have more kids, what would other people think of us? And that was not something I said to Ben, because if I had said that to Ben, he really would have helped me think through that a little bit better. But it was a pretty big factor in me not being honest with Ben about whether or not I wanted to keep having kids. And so that has affected me mentally for all of the years since we did that. I don't even know if I actually recognized that was a big motivating factor for me until I started thinking through this stuff a little bit more and realizing how much I actually did desire to keep having kids. And so that is a big way in which I failed to not fear what other people thought. I was so fearful of what other people thought that I based a huge decision in our life on that. Like I said, there were other factors in it, but that was a big motivating factor for me, and that has been an issue.
Now, so in hearing that, you know, one thing that occurs to me is I think that a good question we should. One reason we should stop fearing what people think is we have to ask ourselves, is what we are fearing people think even what they actually think?
Right.
I mean, how many people in your life were like, had anxiety over you having more children?
Right. Probably.
Yeah. Like probably But yet you felt that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, go ahead.
That's part of my overfunctioning personality is like, I try to anticipate what other people are thinking in order to avoid a conflict later on. Like if I think of all the possible scenarios of what, how people are going to react to this, then maybe I can prevent conflict or anxiety from arising because of this. And I think one of the things that was like an indicator to me that people didn't actually think that was all of the people in my friend group went on to have more than three children.
Oh man, really?
So, oh wait, maybe that isn't an issue. Maybe that wasn't something I should have thought.
Yeah. So, man, that's a pretty big one. And I mean, how is that? So, I mean, you kind of hinted at it, but how has that had ramifications in your life since then, or if you're willing to?
Yeah. I think that there is accumulation effect of those kinds of decisions, the little decisions and the big decisions, that you continue to stuff and stuff and stuff, and you continue to overfunction to a point where your body literally, like, it physically can't take it anymore. And so I think for me, a lot of my panic and anxiety has come out of a lifetime of decisions based on what other people think instead of what God actually thinks. And so definitely dealing with the panic and anxiety, definitely having to have a lot of conversations with Ben about, hey, you know, I'm really struggling with this because quite honestly, I wasn't honest with you. But there have been some positive things from it too, because, you know, Ben and I are getting to know each other better as I'm willing to share, be more honest, I guess, about what I really think about things or whatever. And this is not ever something that he, you know, he has never given me a reason to not be honest with him about what I think. So I don't want to come across like that. And it's interesting to me, in the book, she talks about, I need to find it, like some of the family, like the rules you kind of grow up with. Do you remember reading that? You know, like always be kind, always be good, share, like those kinds of things that we are afraid then of actually being honest whenever we're not okay about certain things. And so I think just culturally, and I don't know if it's a woman thing, maybe you can talk more to how men feel about it, but I think culturally we are always expected to be happy and not get angry and you know, not show any bitterness or have a bad day or any of those things. And so, like, I think just cultural messages accumulated to a point where I didn't even know how necessarily that it was okay to not consider what other people thought before I made a decision. Does that make any sense?
So you're saying it's okay not to think about what people think? In other words, it's okay
it's okay to not take other people's opinions into consideration whenever you're making a decision about your own life.
Sure. Okay. So, and that kind of gets to a point where, I think how she says it, quit fearing what people think, mm-hmm. I think it's the distinction I might make is, you know, I think it's okay to take other people's thoughts into account.
Sure.
But the thoughts should be based on the merits of the thoughts, not on the threat behind the thought.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's one thing I wanted to see. Like, I mean, there is a sense of, like, what I would say in regards to you, the fact that you can, to a degree, you do think about what other people are feeling, and you try to do things that help them and help them feel better and affirm them, and to avoid conflict, to work to build cooperation is not necessarily a bad thing in and of itself, right?
Right.
I mean, it's actually a gift that you have that, you know, that I've relied on, you know, at times, as you know, I'm like, what are people going to think if I say this? You know, I ask Lacey, like, I want to send this to you. What will people think? So I can, you know, and in some ways, like, you know, one of the things one of our elders says to me, you know, I can be very laconic, believe it or not, just say a few words, it's good enough. So someone says, do you think that we should do this as a church? No. Nope. And I'm good with that. Mm-hmm. Mike says, our elder, I don't mind saying his name, this is a good thing. He says, just a few extra words, you know, kind of help people, you know. No, and I appreciate you bringing that up, but, you know, we can't, you know, we've tried to look at this carefully, and this is a decision the elders have made at this time, you know, but we're open to continue to think about it. Thanks for sharing your thoughts so you can be part of that. You know, that's different than just saying no, you know. So that your ability to see those things is a good thing.
It definitely can be. And I think what I would say is stop being afraid to ask other people what they think. Because I think a lot of times our decisions are based on what we think other people will think. And so sometimes I will be trying, I'm so afraid, you know, let's say we stayed at someone's house and, you know, I've got three kids and so we can make a big mess. And so I am trying to anticipate everything that other person wants me to clean up before we leave so that I'm not leaving them a big mess. And so instead of frantically thinking, oh my gosh, is this person going to be like, you know, so upset when we leave because we left this mess, I can say, what is it that I can help you clean up before we leave? And that gives the person the opportunity to say, oh, you know what? I'll get it. Don't worry about it. Or, hey, could you clean these two rooms? And then, you know, that I'll get the rest of it. Instead of just constantly worrying about what that person was going to think. Just kind of giving someone the opportunity to be honest with you.
Well, what happens if that person says, don't worry about it? But in their heart, they're thinking, I kind of wish that they would have cleaned up all these toys.
Then they should read The Emotionally Healthy Woman.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
because
go ahead.
Here is the one thing, you know, in the chapter about quit lying, the one note that I wrote said, yeah, we need to work on not lying, but at the same time, we also need to work on being willing to hear truth. And I think it's kind of the same way with the idea of being willing to ask what other people think, then we need to be willing to tell other people what we think. So I think each of these chapters kind of has two sides to it, because I think a lot of times when we are afraid of what other people think, we might also struggle with thinking those same things about other people. Does that make sense?
Oh, sure, yeah.
So I think we need to quit worrying about what other people think, but also be willing to answer hard questions when people ask them to us. So that person in the cleaning situation needs to say, like, here's what I'd like you to do.
The question is, can we be okay with letting that be their responsibility to communicate? And not feel like we have to deal with that we have to fix that for them, like that they have that responsibility.
Yeah, I think that is something that was like a novel idea to me, like allowing people to deal with their own discomfort. because it's a growth opportunity for them. Like, but we have to be aware that not everybody is going to be willing to do the hard work of digging into their own hearts. And so that some relationships could, you know, not end up going well if people aren't willing to do that, take their own responsibility for their own thoughts.
Sure. So do you think it can go well if we take responsibility for it for them?
No.
Oh, okay. No, I just wondered.
We can't. Anybody who has parented a child knows that you cannot change someone else's heart. You cannot change. Yeah. There's no amount of discipline or behavior modification that can be implemented. Like, the person has to be a willing participant in order for any change to happen.
So here's a hypothesis that I have that I'm still testing.
Okay.
My hypothesis is that it's never wrong. Now, I'm not saying that there's never a wrong time or not a wrong way, but we should never feel like we cannot share our actual thoughts. Like, that's, we should always be able to say, whatever the discussion is, that I should be able to say my own thoughts. Now, that may mean that people don't like us, you know, I mean, so there is, you know, that there may be consequences to that. But the question is, if we have a relationship where we can't share our thoughts, is that a real relationship or is that a form of slavery?
Yeah.
I'm almost just like saying, like, now, and I mean, I think it goes both ways. Like, as I interrupt you,
No,
I don't want you, I don't really want you to share your thought here, Lacey. No, I'm just kidding. So I just clarifying just a little bit more, just to say, like, obviously the ideal is everybody can be as open as they want about their thoughts. But I'm really thinking, like, I don't have to wait for other people to do that. I should be able to share my thoughts. That doesn't mean, and the only reason I wouldn't is out of fear of penalty. But that's just my hypothesis, so you don't have to necessarily come up with
it. Yeah, I think I'd have to think about it a little bit. But what I will say is, when I first read the Quit Lying chapter, I was kind of offended by what she was saying, because some of the examples she gives in the beginning of the chapter, it's just like, you know, I was angry or sad, or like, these are the things I wanted to say. And I'm like, can we, like, if we love Jesus, can we really talk to people like that? like just kind of shocked at it. But I think what she was trying to do was kind of get the point across. And at the end, she has four kind of rules of speaking the truth. And so she says, you need to speak the truth respectfully. You need to speak the truth honestly. You need to speak it clearly, and you need to speak it timely. And you cannot have three of those and do it well. You have to have all four of those in order to do it well. And she gives the example of a wife asking her husband how her hair, do you like my hair? And the husband, like, can we imagine him just looking up and saying, no, I don't like it. So that's a truth. It might be a truth, but it was not respectful or clear or probably timely. And so she that goes on to say, he could have said, I think you're beautiful any way you look. It's not my favorite haircut. And so he did it a little more respectfully. And honestly and timely and clearly, he kind of said that in meeting all of those criteria, which still could have been taken wrong if his wife isn't willing to hear it. And so I think with your hypothesis, we really have to be people who are working towards telling the truth well and listening for what other people are saying.
Yes. And that's what, so as we're talking here, I'm thinking like the hypothesis, I think may be right in the absence, you know, but it's incomplete because, you know, I think just, I was thinking about James 1:19, let every person be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to wrath.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple things related to that is I kind of feel like our tendency is to think, we think of someone who only says their, who always says their view as a person who kind of forces their view into the center.
Yeah.
And so it's hard for us. It's like either I do that or someone else does that.
Yeah.
Rather than to say, here's how it begins. Everybody starts with curiosity as regards to what other people are saying. And then we listen carefully. And I think like for myself at times, then after I've listened, I have been afraid to speak because I realize I have a different view, having listened to this. And that's where what James says, I think is crucial to pay attention because the Bible does not call us to become a doormat, it calls us to be deferential mm-hmm. and to honor others above ourselves, but it doesn't call us to say, you become a zero or are allowed to be abused by others. You have a relationship has to be two parts. You
right.
start with deference to others, but there has to be a place, even though you're slow to speak, where you speak. And if you're not able to speak in a relationship, then that's not a real relationship. Relationship requires mutuality. And so maybe a way of even like taking what James says and Jerry Scazzaro, what you're saying, is like that the word that came to my mind is we are always working in our conversations for mutuality, you know, where everybody's being able to, we're trying to eliminate all the things that would keep us from allowing us to put all our thoughts into the conversation.
Yeah. And I just want to talk about some practical ways to start moving toward that. And as you were talking, what I was thinking about is, you know, there have been times where people have spoken something that was important to them. And my reaction has been one of defensiveness. And so I'm either not necessarily able to hear what they're saying at that point because it's been hurtful or so. Because truth is not always going to feel great. And so there are going to be times where people, you know, sharing truth is going to hurt, but we need to be willing to, she says, reflect on the movements of your heart. So reflecting back on why did I feel that way? Asking yourself questions. Why was I so defensive? What in what they said hurt me? And is there something that needs to change in my own heart because of it? And then also she talks about contemplating the love of God.
Before you go on to that, can I just add one statement from her that I think, you know, what I'm hearing you saying is you're moving to greater awareness of what's going on. And mm-hmm. I liked this challenge that she gave. She said, pay attention to yourself over the next few days. Observe your interactions with others. Determine the number of times your words and actions change in order to gain the approval or avoid the disapproval of others. The shifts we make in our behavior are often subtle and beneath the level of our consciousness, so be alert.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of what you're summarizing as a statement. And to me, it's like you're saying, try to become more aware of what you're doing. And because if you're not aware, you can't make any choice if you're just doing it automatically.
Right. So you, one of two ways you do that is, you know, sometimes when you react, ask, you want to reflect on why you're reacting, but also just reflecting on interactions you've had over the last few days and saying, are there times where I did something to make myself look better or whatever. So a lot of it is just reflecting on good reactions you had, reflecting on hard reactions you had, different things like that. But I love those quotes that you just, just read. But also just kind of wrapping, I think this kind of wraps up both of those chapters, is contemplating the love of God, and remembering that, you know, Jesus' sinless record is the way that God looks at us, and finding our value in who God says that we are rather than what other people think of us. So I think, you know, reflecting on the way you're reacting and contemplating the love of God, and the thing that she says she does is she just sits in silence and takes in the promises that God shares in his word, you know, reads his word, takes those promises in and reminds herself who she is, which is a huge way to move forward when you struggle with what we've been talking about.
Sure. Are you giving more weight to people's approval than you should? And I think in a way that keeps you from good things or potentially harms you. In her case, it was, you know, her life was falling apart and she was ready to fall, you know, she was breaking down because she was trying to bear a load that she couldn't. And so she was giving that her husband more weight than he deserved.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And then she took that and she realized she needed to be honest with what was going on. And she needed to see that her value didn't come from how she served in the church or how she served her husband, but from God. Mm-hmm. So she could even say no to her husband.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one thing that might, you know, people be like, can I say?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And
as a husband and as a pastor, yes, you can. And you should. Say no to your husband when he's, you need to give your thoughts.
It's not something that any of those people, like, it's not, it wasn't some like restriction that her husband or her church or her children placed on her. It was all in the way she thought about it. And she says, like, as she started quitting these things, she realized that it wasn't her husband or her church or her kids or her, you know, whatever, Nate, you name it. It was, you know, all these things that she was so fed up with. It was none of those things that actually was causing her anxiety and her frustration. It was actually just the way she reacted to those things, and the things that she believed that needed to change.
So as you go forward from this, how do you think that this will affect you applying this in your life?
Well, I really think the struggle with it is it's so ingrained in us, and it's so ingrained in our culture to try to look good on the outside, that I think it's just going to be a daily decision to submit myself to Jesus and pray that Jesus helps me be able to remember what he's brought to my attention through this book. And I think just being aware of it is a huge step, but then making choices to be honest with other people about the situations. I mean, I don't even know how to word it. I'm sorry. Just be honest about what I think when someone asks me, what do you think?
yeah, actually tell them.
yeah, actually tell them what I think. And also, it sounds kind of cliche, but actually like getting to know myself, like, what is it I think about this thing? What is it? Like, I think if I would have done that with having more kids, I think that would have made a huge difference if I would have actually known, like, hey, you're making this decision based on this and this and this. And so really just trying to decide what it is I do think about certain things that I haven't necessarily considered yet.
Yeah, that's really good.
So, anyway, what are you going to, does this change the way that you live?
So, yeah, I think it's just, you know, the ideas here are ones that it was a good reinforcement of things that I have been considering. And just I like all of what you're saying about what do I actually want. It's easy to let our wants be determined by other people. Mm-hmm. and to ask yourself, and even if you don't necessarily act on that, just being aware, you know, that's the thing. And then asking myself, you know, just, you know, as you said, it's a daily struggle to say, you know, am I being open-hearted with the way I interact? Am I just adjusting to make people feel comfortable? And why am I doing that? And is there actually any real ramifications for me not doing that? Am mm-hmm. I just running from, you know, any sort of discomfort, you know, that I might feel in the moment, even though in the long run, it'd be better for me to actually contribute as a person and tell people what I actually think so they can know. So I think it's great. I think it's and because, you know, God has called us to serve him as the people that we actually are, you know, and he wants us to he's made us in specific ways and he likes those and he wants us to know that and give what we have and not just what others tell us that we should or others' expectation. We need to listen to him. We need to see ourselves. And then also consider, too, what's helpful to other people.
Yeah.
So, but I think that that's a process of being open about what we think and continuing to engage with other people. I really like the fact, yeah, I think this is a huge issue, you know, that, you know, we just go around things and we don't really share much of what's, we have both kind of extremes. We have kind of like the people who accommodate by not sharing their thoughts and then mm-hmm. they share them to other people or, you know, or whatever, mm-hmm. just kind of become diminished. And then we have other people who kind of like just dominate. And it's like, then they just share all their thoughts and they never, and just to learn to say, hey, I need to learn to interact in both ways. I need to help pull people in to say, you know, I feel like you're not sharing your thoughts. But also need to be able to say to other people, like, I feel like I'm not allowed to share my thoughts here.
Mm-hmm.
And so because it's about building real relationships with real people and we need that mutuality. We need to bring ourselves. It's us connecting with other people. And we also need other people to connect with us. That's what real community is. It's mm-hmm. not just one person dominating others and or us letting them or serving, just being a slave, you know, it's interaction.
Yeah.
So really good stuff. And I think this, you know, continues to confirm the value of this book. And I think we need to dig into it a little bit more.
Let's do it.
So good enough for today?
Yeah.
Any thoughts you want to share?
No, that was too many.
All right. Well, let's close this out. Thank you for joining us today and good to have you on board to for this discussion. So have a great day.